This is The Beat on 720 WGN and on demand at WGNradio.com.
720 WGN, The Beat, indeed. We're with you till 7 o'clock. Amy Guth warming up in the bullpen. Harry Tynowitz, good afternoon, buddy.
Good afternoon, Carm. How the heck are you?
I'm excellent. Good evening, I should say. I know that we got a lot to jam in here in 1 hour of radio time. But you really enjoyed my Tim Anderson topic we were talking earlier in the week as to whether or not, because everybody's on Timmy's side, man. He did nothing wrong. He had a home run. He had fun. He threw his bat at the dugout. All that was cool. But then I asked you, do you want your kids imitating Tim Anderson? And you and I, and perhaps you, 312-981-7200, how do we feel about a youngster, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, a young Curtis producing the broadcast today, flipping his bat after he gets a base hit in a Little League game at 10 years old because he thinks that he's on his way to the big leagues, Harry?
Well, you know, I've seen Curtis. You know, he does like 3 shows here. You know, he's you know, he and Krista help run White Sox baseball because WGN's flagship home for White Sox baseball. And whether he's with Plyer or he's with us, when he has a good show, it's over, he flips his headphones. And the other producers, like Ben and stuff, they just sit there with their jaw dropped.
Wow, they do. Right.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, there's the act like you've been there before, but I've never liked Ricky Renteria more. Ricky said, you don't want him to flip his bat? Get him out.
But Ricky back in the day would not do what Timmy's doing. Let's call it what it is here now.
It's a new day.
It is a new day. That is exactly right.
Tim Anderson has gone from being promising to spectacular.
I would just love to hear from parents out there who love their kids more than they love life itself.
Which would be all parents.
There you go. Most parents, I would say. I'm not all parents.
Yeah, yeah.
If they actually feel that way. And
it's sad.
Have had to have conversations with their children around the way they celebrate their accomplishments on the athletic field that is uncomfortable. They're having a good time, but mom and dad don't want you to have, quote, too good of a time because then you're showing up the other side. And they're learning it from big league ball players, from NBA ball players, NFL, all that. These guys are role models.
Not according to Charles Barkley.
He was lying. Clearly they are. Who, I mean, did you look, when you were growing up, did you look up more to your parents or did you look up more to, I don't know, who was your guy? It was a young Harry Tynowitz. I'm gonna guess it was
Hef.
Hef?
Yeah.
There you go. I'm thinking for you, it was, let's think, I don't want to get myself in trouble. Who was it? Who was your number one Blackhawk growing up?
My number one Blackhawk, there were two guys. There was Keith Magnuson and there was Tony Esposito.
So were you getting in fights at school, a la Keith Magnuson?
Sometimes I would lead the charge into my classroom. You know, I'd be like the first one in the classroom. I'd come running in, do a couple laps around all the desks. You know, there's so many players that I just idolized. But my dad was my hero. My dad put the bread on the table.
My father, but he was most definitely not my hero as a kid. My hero was 23. I was wearing a
23. Your hero was Wayne Van Dorp.
Right, Michael Jeffrey Jordan,
Mike Bratz.
I think we've mentioned that enough on the show. I would wear the knee brace and I would flip it over. I didn't have any problems with my knees. I'd play on a 7-foot hoop and I would stick out my tongue and try to dunk the basketball.
My favorite thing is when you used to bring the kids the drinks in the treehouse. That was so cool.
That was great, too. I'd drink the Gatorade. I'd get the quarter pounder with cheese, whatever else. If I had a car, it would have been a Chevy. All that stuff. But so now, I mean, you got kids doing the Feed Me James Harden thing.
The Feed Me is okay. What I have a problem with is the neck cut. That's really uncool. That's wrong. That's bad. You go to bed without any dessert.
And the bat flip is okay? What Little League?
Yeah.
Little League game, you allowed to flip your bat?
Yeah, you're allowed to. If you hit a home run like that, I mean, look. I would say Little League game, you probably don't want to flip your bat, but here's what I think is far worse, okay? And I used to be a big proponent of it, is the participation trophy. I used to think the participation trophy is awesome because I was a kid that didn't get, you know, this, you'll find this hard to believe, but I wasn't a great natural athlete growing up.
I do find that very hard to believe. The way you walk into this studio, the incredible athletic ability that you show on a daily basis.
Damn straight.
I can't believe it.
Damn straight. So I thought participation trophies are cool, but, you know, then I thought about it, and it sets a bad example. My son was playing soccer. He's like 7 years old, and it's hot. He doesn't want to play anymore, so he tells me that his foot's hurt. He tells the coach his foot's hurt, and he can't go out there, so he sits out the last 10 minutes of the last game with like two other kids. Then the pizza comes for the pizza party. These three kids, they sprint over to get it. And then they're giving them participation trophies. You don't deserve that. You don't deserve that. Okay, look, if you're Tim Anderson and you're in the bigs and you hit a home run off a major league pitcher.
Sure.
Flip the bat. He's not pulling down his pants and doing, you know, the Randy Moss thing.
So I would almost put it like when you're 21 years old, you're old enough to drink and you can flip it. Same thing.
You waited until you were 21.
So
21.
So fine. You're 18.
Where did you grow up?
You're 19 years old and you're in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. 12? When did you start over there?
12. That's sick, man.
Well, what was it, Harry? If you really want to get to honesty here.
High school theater parties.
Oh, okay, high school theater, bro. There you go. You get my point, though. In the big leagues, you're old enough to do it. And I see it from 7 year olds. And parents are just like laughing at it, like, ha 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 ha. Billy's having a good time. No.
Right. Mr. Skin has this, my friend Mr. Skin. He's got a website. I can't remember what the name of it is, but Mr. Skin has a website. And
MrSkin.com?
That's it.
Right.
His son, Bo, is a baseball protege. Okay. Rick Hahn is scouting his kid. All right. His kid is playing with like in a league with like kids 4 and 5 years older than him, and there's not a better hitter in the league. And there's video of him online. You can look up. I can't say what Mr. Skin's real last name is. It'd be like saying Batman's Adam West. But anyhow, the kid never would do anything like that. He would never flip a bat. He would never be arrogant. He's just, you know, a teammate. He's one of the guys. All right, but I think if you're in the bigs. You know, you do that. And when you do that, there's a chance your kid is going to imitate it.
I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining about the bigs, clearly. But I do think that there is a very key moment in parenting that's got to go on around what's going on, watching big league NBA NFL players play. I like this text from the 6-3-year-old. I told my children they can only flip their bat if they make it to the major leagues, and only then. That's a good one. I would augment it. Perhaps if they get to double A and hit a huge home run, you can flip your bat then too. You don't have to get all the way to the big leagues. 7-0-8, I think it's the moment you achieve something. You have a burst of adrenaline that causes you to celebrate, sometimes without thinking. See, that's cool what you're saying, but I also think kids go to games hoping that if I make this shot, then I am going to do this. It seems pretty pre-planned to me. I know if I do this, this is what's going to happen.
See, I went to Little League games just hoping that, you know, I wouldn't strike out. You know, I never thought about flipping a bat. But if I ever got, like, you know, a home run, I would just, I wouldn't know what I was doing. I would just go crazy, you know, like Prince, let's go crazy.
Yeah, okay, so what would going crazy look like? Like, what's,
I can't relate to it.
Nah, you've never hit a home run. Have you ever hit a home run? Over
with
here.
The ladies.
I got athletic moments
okay, like, let's play the videotape. This is Carm in a 3-on-3 pickup game at Iowa, his sophomore year, playing against two kids that only had one leg. Let's play that video.
That was about it. Yeah. Okay.
No, Carm, Lev tells me you're pretty awesome on a tennis court.
Yeah, and when I hit a big shot against Bill and I win a point, I don't go bananas and pop the chest out. I'm playing Bill Leff in tennis. That would be incorrect. But I just think it's something that is should be before. Let's put it this way: Little League is about to start. You're gonna have. You've got commissioners getting together. I think it's important that all the parents and we get on mm-hmm. the same page as to what is acceptable and what is not. These are important conversations to have. I'm making myself available. I will be a commissioner to any Little League team. You can hit me up on Twitter at the Carm. You can do other. There's a million other ways to get at me. Facebook, whatever you want. I am offering my services to make your to have your league be the best Little League with the highest morals possible. I would like to help.
He's at the Carm. I'm Hey Tweet Harry. So that's your first rule, you would say, if you were in charge of the Little League? My first rule would be nothing dirty. Nothing dirty. Everybody's going to play, nothing dirty.
Fair enough. All right. No, but that's dirt. Okay, so celebrating's not dirty.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Here's the question I thought you were going to throw out there, which is, who gets to define what's dirty?
Mm-hmm.
And what is, in fact, dirty?
Well, right. That's why. Exactly. Good point, David Jennings. Because, you know, is celebrating over celebrating dirty?
No, I mean, I'm telling you, there are kids in Little League that are like twice the size of other kids who could take advantage. I had a kid, I was playing catcher once, and a kid twice my size ran me over. I had a puffy eye for like a week.
Oh, God. I couldn't even imagine. That is just a rough visual.
Right, right. I held on the ball. He was out, but I had a puffy eye for like a week.
You really hung on to the ball? I don't know.
I did. Because he embedded it in my chest. A team of surgeons took him 40 minutes to remove it.
Is there video of that?
There's no video. Back in the day, we might have radio.
I need actual. Well, how about a picture? We got a picture?
There's no picture.
There was cameras back then, right? Hey, want to see Tom Skilling live in concert? You can come on out to WGN-TV's White Sox Weather Day, May 14th. You can watch the White Sox play the Indians after you see Skilling. Tickets available at whitesox.com/W.
I hope he plays Stairway.
GN. There is an anniversary going on that we're going to talk about coming back here that I really love the spin on a very famous movie by the name of Field of Dreams. I want to get your opinion on it, Harry, because I think it's the most overrated film in the history of baseball. 720 WGN.
I
need all production officially approved with me at all times. What is this?
I sent a text about 7 hours ago.
I didn't see that text.
Well, because there's a surprise for you on it.
Oh, I love surprises.
Boy, just throw me under the bus, buddy. Send a text. I go, hey, let's pull some songs for 420. Let's pull Comfortably Numb.
Oh,
I gave him specific songs. Comfortably Numb, Hey 19.
What's 420?
It's if you add 416 and 4, you get 420. 420, bro. It's the National Stoner Day.
All right, dude.
Yeah, all right.
Let's go back to the University of Iowa, bro.
Oh. Yeah. Was it prevalent there?
Yeah, man. I had a basement.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, man. Most of the 70s, my favorite baseball team was in that basement.
Yeah, no. I got you, dude. Thanks for bringing that up. Appreciate it. So, it's rare that I would read something right out of the paper to you, Harry, and to you, 720 fans, but this is written by Paul Newberry.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been able to articulate exactly my feelings on Field of Dreams to this level. This is some good stuff. If you build it, he will come. Do you have If You Build It, He Will Come? We find that, Curtis. Thank you so much. Paul Lees. 30 years after the release of Field of Dreams, it's time for a major reassessment. Sorry, all you folks who view baseball and this movie as some sort of timeless metaphor for connecting your past and understanding what America is really all about. In reality, it's just another terrible film. If you could somehow get past all the factual errors and horrible casting, Ray Goodfellas, Liotta as Shoeless Joe Jackson, you realize this is nothing more than an epic helping of corniness passed off as some ethereal fantasy that gets to the deeper meaning of life, which apparently is nothing more than the chance to play one more game of catch with your athletically challenged dad. One more. Like so many people, I remember gushing over Field of Dreams after it was released April 21st, that's tomorrow, 1989. But that was also a time when I still clung to the schmaltzy belief pushed by such folks as George Will and Bob Costas, that baseball was more than a sport. It was a national pastime, a slow-moving game that somehow managed to epitomize all that is great about our country and a patch of grass and dirt marked by 90-foot paths. Or as James Earl Jones' character, reclusive author Terrence Mann, tells Kevin Costner, quote, "The one constant, do we have this one? The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America's rolled like an army of strollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that was once was good, and it could be again. Can someone please pass a barf bag?" Bull Durham was a great baseball movie. The Natural was a great baseball movie. Major League was a great baseball movie. I'm sure that you can think of more. Field of Dreams, it's so incredibly weird.
Let's give Left some love. Major League.
I said Major League.
Okay, all right. The Women's Baseball Story, League of Their Own.
League of Their Own was a tremendous
movie.
Tremendous baseball.
Pride of the Yankees, old school. You know, Gary Cooper as Lou Gehrig. That's a great baseball movie. There are so many better baseball movies. Fear Strikes Out, the Jimmy Pearsall story.
James Earl Jones wants to go back and play baseball with everybody in 1920, an African American who was not allowed to play in the game back then. Is anybody tying this together?
Eight Men Out.
Eight Men Out was a phenomenal baseball movie.
I'd much rather watch Eight Men. The Sandlot's a much better baseball movie.
What about the one with Robert Redford?
Right, The Natural.
The Natural. Phenomenal.
Yeah. What about Bad News Bears?
Bad News Bears was incredible. Maybe the best baseball movie of all time.
Come on, Buttermaker.
Right.
I mean,
and yet Field of Dreams gets the flag gets flubbed. The greatest baseball movie of all time is Field. Get out of here.
Angels in the Outfield.
I didn't see that
Young Gordon Levitt.
Wasn't there one with, Charlie Sheen?
Yeah, Major League.
Major League.
You know one that doesn't get enough love is De Niro. It's Bang the Drum Slowly. Have you guys ever seen that?
I've seen parts. I never sat down for the whole thing.
It's really good. And I mean, it's just ridiculous that people want to worship this movie, Field of Dreams. There's a couple of really cool scenes in it. And my friend Jimmy Q brought me back an ear of corn when he went to visit the field in Iowa. But come on, it's overrated.
I mean, people, Carm, I may stop listening to you. Stop. Hold your tongue, Mark. I'm turning you guys off. This is maybe my least popular take of all time. Field of Dreams was an overrated bad movie.
How would you rate some of the newer ones, like 42? That one's a good
42 is good.
Moneyball.
Moneyball's very
a great
good.
Film.
Very good.
Great.
Trouble with the Curve, Million Dollar Arm.
Trouble with the Curve, anything with Clint Eastwood is outstanding.
Rookie of the Year is getting texted in. I would say Field of Dreams is better than Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, the only thing cool about Rookie of the Year is that it takes place at Wrigley.
What about
how many other movies led to creation of a mini park?
That's true too, but like it's just ridiculous. By the way, the whole premise that I'm gonna cut out somehow the farm's gonna be gone on this huge farm if we cut out a little baseball field that I can't make any more money. I mean, come on. That doesn't make any sense. There's plenty of more land for Ray, for Kevin Costner, and what was her name?
I would rather watch an adult film called Field of Screams than watch Field of Dreams again.
312-981-7200. By the way, just because Carm and Harry have this opinion on the movie doesn't mean that you know you can't hold out that Field of Dreams was the greatest baseball movie.
Did you ever see the one where Dennis Quaid is the 35-year-old pitcher?
The rookie?
Yeah, the rookie.
Yeah. Good movie.
It's okay.
But I would Field of Dreams better than The Rookie. But it's not. Yeah. It's not.
It's better than Mr. 3000.
Better than Mr. 3000, yes. It's better than Shaq's movie, Kazam, or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, not technically a baseball movie, Carm.
I understand. I'm just, if we throw all sports movies in there. But it's not better than a zillion that we just named. A League of Their Own,
right,
The
right,
Natural,
right.
Major Bull Durham.
I
mean, come on.
That is the standard. That is the baseball movie.
I want a movement. Thank you, 312, the one person that agrees Field of Dreams is garbage. Thank you. I don't know why this matters to me, but it's just been raised up. Oh, Field of Dreams. Come on, man.
It's just overrated. That's all I'm saying is it's just overrated.
Just a little bit on the overrated side. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. All right, now. Won't you listen? 720 WGN, White Sox Weekly in the rearview mirror. This is the beat till 7 o'clock. Amy Guth warming up. What's going on over there, Harry?
420. It's a day to play Steely Dan. It's a day to play Grateful Dead. It's a day to play Bob Marley. Is that Sabbath? There's Black Sabbath for all you folks that are celebrating 420. Happy 420.
Is that what they did back at Kansas? Black Sabbath?
Oh, yeah. They did everything back at Kansas. You know what? It was so great during football season. You know what the football players used to do? Talk about the basketball team.
Great job.
Now, you were just talking about Bull Durham, which tomorrow will celebrate its
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. Field of Dreams will celebrate its 30th anniversary.
Correct.
Meanwhile, today, I celebrate a different anniversary.
You do?
Yes. 33 years ago today, what happened?
33 years ago today, April
20th. 1986.
Oh, my God.
Curtis?
I know what you're talking about.
An hour and a half ago, Ames guarding Michael Jordan. Jordan goes up with a shot and hits it and has 61 points to tie Elgin Baylor's all-time single-game playoff record.
And shooting.
And he established... Jordan with 8 on the clock. Jordan ties the game.
Oh, boy.
63 points.
Right, Tommy. Right at you, Tommy Heinsohn.
That was a fantastic move.
Damn right it was.
Victory for the Boston.
Now turn it off. I don't want to remember the fact they lost 135-131. I didn't know that Harry was going to honor Mike today, so we do a lot of Mike on the show, which you can never do too much Mike for the record, damn it.
If I asked you what is Michael Jordan's greatest game ever as a Chicago Bull, what would your answer be? Because my answer is that game right there.
Are you serious? Really? You'd say 63?
Think about what was happening.
Think about
who was on the floor with him, okay? Orlando Woolridge.
The worst players in the history of basketball were on the floor.
Well, I mean, I really like Dave Corzine. Dave Corzine's a really good dude, but, you know, Michael made him better. Oaktree was on that team.
Gene Banks.
Yeah.
Kyle Macy.
Sidney Green, who I like a lot. Mike Smrek. George Gervin had age. Pax was on that team.
Right.
Coming off the Pines. But Michael was playing on the parquet floor against one of the two greatest players in the game, in Larry Bird, against one of the two greatest threesomes in the game, Bird, McHale, Robert Chief Parrish, against one of the two greatest teams in the game. And he was, you know, how many games did he have under his belt? This is early in Michael's career, and he had 63 points. 60. He willed his team into overtime. He couldn't do it all by himself. This is just, I mean, like, it's so awesome that he hit that shot against Utah, you know, and with the bad pizza and, you know, and he had the flu. And you can call that the Jordan game if you want. The game in Detroit on Easter Sunday. You know, Michael had so many great moments. I'm just saying this young player who Chicago fans are raving about, that's the day that the nation saw Michael Jordan and how special he was.
After that game, that was his sixth playoff game. They lost to the Bucks his rookie year in four, won game three at home. And they lost game one in that series of Celtics. He had 49. And then, so that was the sixth playoff game. And then in the third game of that series, they get swept out by the Celtics. I think he had 19 in a terrible game at home. And I remember him crying on the bench afterwards. I watched that game as April 20th, 1986. So that means I was 12 years old. And I'm like, this guy's the greatest player ever. And I was 12 years old. I didn't maybe have the perspective that I have now as a 45-year-old man. But and then the first game of 1986-87, I was at Rob Ginsburg's bar mitzvah on a Saturday night.
How is Rob Ginsburg?
Rob Ginsburg is great. And I remember going.
Where did they have his bar mitzvah?
I don't know. It was downtown. He was a big shooter.
Okay.
So I go to the bar mitzvah. I'm a young guy. It's opening night. Jordan's third year. I remember asking, like, maybe the bartender, which they had at that bar mitzvah, I said, did the Bulls win? Yes. Jordan had 50. And
what?
So he had 50 on, he scored 50 on opening night against the Knicks in his third season. And it was at that moment that there was no more hesitation in my body, Harry. He put up 63 against, this guy's the greatest player ever. And then he starts out the next year with 50. I'm like, all right. This is like there's no fluke here. There's no nothing. This dude is going to be the greatest player to ever play the game. Bobby Knight said it before he ever played one game, and so Nothing put him on the map. Well, and that's not necessarily true because the shot against Carolina, but nothing in the NBA put him on the map like 63.
Shot against Georgetown for Carolina.
Shot against Georgetown for Carolina.
Michael Jordan on this day going in. Bulls were a huge underdog on this day.
Did you bet it?
They should have. Well, of course I bet it. They covered. They covered. So it wasn't a total loss.
There you go.
But I had been at the Cubs game.
I bet you had.
And I came home. I the girl I was dating, I drove her to O'Hare.
Sally?
Tao.
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 Wow.
Her mother named her for her her best friend, who was of Greek heritage.
Okay.
It's got an accent agoo. It's like Theo Epstein, but
you literally remember that you went to the Cubs game and you watched the game with Tao.
No. I drove Tao. Tao had to go. Most women, after they go out with me to a Cubs game, they need to leave town. I don't know why that is. So I got home and I couldn't believe I'd avoided the score. And I watched two of my all-time favorite basketball games. I avoided the score, which is like a victory in itself.
You taped it on VHS, an old school VHS. And are you serious?
Yes. And the day I got my VHS was the day of the NC State upset of Houston for the national title. And I was at a rehearsal for a play I was in. And I avoided the score all day. And I got home and I watched that game like starting at 12:30 in the morning. It was like one of the greatest games I ever saw in my life.
See, our listening audience probably knows what VHS tape is. But for those who are under the age of, 30?
Yeah.
No, Curtis, you know what a VHS tape is?
Well, I can't hear you. I know what a VHS tape is. Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, fine. Under the age of 20... nobody knows what VHS tape is anymore. DVR it. What do you mean? You had to put a cassette tape in this weird contraption and then you could watch it back, but that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was. But, nowadays, if you're taping a game, I still call it taping a game, but if you're recording a game, you got to remember to turn off your alerts because that's what will kill you.
You can't avoid games now. There's just too much stuff going on. Your whole life would end.
So you started talking anniversary. I just wanted to tell you what anniversary I was thinking.
I very, very much appreciate it. All right, so let's come on back here. A very special guy left us this week. Harry, I know you had strong connections with Chet. We'll talk about Kopic, the godfather of sports radio, coming on back here, 720 WGN. WGN, little bonus. White Sox news for you. Dylan Cease just got off the mound. Game one of a doubleheader down to AAA. Dylan, 4 2/3 innings, 5 runs, 3 earned, walked 5, struck out 2, gave up 4 hits in the game.
That's not Dylan Cease-like.
It's not exactly what you want. That's correct. Zach Collins, 1 for 3 with a double and a walk. Charlie Tilson, 1 for 4 with a double. Daniel Palka, 0-for-1 with 3 walks. So, seeing some pitches. I was on Thursday night, the day that we learned that Chet Kopic passed away in a car accident, which happened all the way back on April the 6th. More details were coming out about that today. People are interested. He was in a Savannah hospital Wednesday from injuries he sustained in an April 6th car crash. This is how it was written up. Hammond, Indiana woman was driving his 2004 Lexus. Kopic was a passenger in when the crash occurred. The woman was driving southbound near Tidewatch Drive when her car crossed the median and struck a 2018 Land Rover traveling in the opposite direction. The Land Rover then struck a 2019 Chevrolet two-door traveling in the same direction. Both the driver of the Land Rover and the driver of the Chevrolet were local residents. Kopic, all three drivers, and one additional passenger who was in the Chevrolet were transported to a nearby hospital with injuries. All were reported to be wearing seatbelts at the time of the crash, and then Chet passed away from his injuries a week and a half later. So, those are the details that came out, that I was able to find today. Bottom line, as I said Thursday, and I had you on, Harry, Chet meant a lot to a lot of people, and nobody is out here, trying to raise him up like he was Jesus himself, but he was a larger than life sports figure, and you of course knew him much longer than I did, and he meant a lot to you, did he not, Chester?
He meant a lot to me. He meant a lot to before I knew him, before I had, I consider myself lucky to, I respect this medium that we're in, and I've always felt like, you know, appreciate every day. You know, you never know how long you're going to get to be a part of it. And I felt Chet's one of those guys, like, you know, everybody thought that they, you know, right now everybody feels like they know Jimmy Kimmel, you know, because they watch him on TV, or, you know somebody that you see all the time on television or something like that, or that you listen to on the radio. You know, you hear a Cochran or Rowe and you think, oh, I know them. I know, his wife's name, his kids' names. But I knew a lot about Kopic before I ever met him. And then I met him and he could not have been cooler. He was the first guy that was doing a sports talk show on radio in Chicago at night. And I would just listen for hours. And as we talked about on that Thursday night, we used to play games, my friend and I, like guess who it was before, you know, Chet would bring him on. And, it was just so great. You know, he would have
coming out of New Trier or coming out of Glencoe, Illinois, Pride of New Trier. He once was a dynamo on the comedy scene, man who has been at Ties Till 4 one too many times.
He would build whoever the guest was up like 10 times greater than they were, and if they were a great guest, he'd build them up even more. But he was just so, you know, different. He was unique. Chet Kopic was unique, and I wish he had, I'm so sorry we lost him at 70. It's way too young, and I wish he had gone out, like on a bigger stage. I wish he had a different platform going on than what he left us on, because, I mean, he was a sports anchor. He was a radio host. He was the voice of Notre Dame. He was so many things, and, everybody did a Kopic. Everybody, he would hang around East Bank Club, and it was just,
It was more than hang around East Bank Club. I think he lived at the East Bank Club.
I exchanged texts with Bruce Levine, the greatest baseball.
Bruce and him have meals there all the time.
All the time, at least once a week. And Bruce is really shaken.
Yeah.
And, he was, if you're lucky enough to get to know Chet, it was a major loss, and there's not going to be anybody else like him.
So I'm just thinking back to the TV guys at that time.
Yeah.
And Mark Giangreco, still doing it now, was a larger-than-life figure.
He was just a weekend guy then.
Right. Well, in 82, yeah. I guess, was he not, did he become full-time or the big guy after Chet at 5?
Yes. Okay. So, but Mark, who's spectacular, Mark, who sets the trends, and, you know, that's such a strong 1-2 punch with JR, Jim Rose, and Mark. But
think about that. JR was, I think he was working back then, too. He must have, or he was just starting. He was certainly in the 80s.
Right.
I know that for a fact. And Johnny Morris, who was forever on Channel 2 with Howard Sudbury, and Tim Weigel, RIP. I mean, Timmy's been gone a long time. But all these guys, I mean, that was it for sports in the city.
Right. It was like the golden age.
Right. I mean, you had Chuck Swirsky on the radio. But, I mean, these were the guys. But none of them acted anything like Chet. You would never see Johnny out. You wouldn't see any of those guys really out. Maybe right. Tim was the most gregarious of them. But Chet, he lived for people knowing who he was, which maybe that spoke to some insecurity or whatever. But it was also, it just made him, you wanted him to wave at you just because he was funny. You were like, you found it humorous. There was something about him that you wanted to get his attention.
Chet was a larger than life figure because he was just a larger than life figure.
He was 6'6".
I worked with him twice. I worked with him at MAQ when they did the sports huddle with Peggy Kaczynski and Brian Davis. And when I was at LS, he also was doing, I think that was when he started doing the voice of Notre Dame.
Okay.
And Chet wanted to sell me his car at one point.
It's only been driven on Sundays by a little old coach from Bloomington, Indiana.
But Chet was one of those guys, it's like, you can't ignore him. He walked into a room and he took over the room without having to say a word. Being 6'6 helped, but his personality. He was a bigger than life kind of guy. That's just him. He wasn't an act.
One of my good friends, his name is Seth Marks. He's in the liquidation business. I used to do radio with him all the way back in the day. Some people might still recognize that name. And so he's in the liquidation business, right? He gets a call from a publisher. Hey, can you help us move 59,000 copies of Fat Man Can't Be Dancing? Like, the book just didn't sell. Which, I mean, it's part of Kopic's story, right? I mean, he was trying so hard to get back into it.
Wrote five books.
Yeah, I mean, I hesitate to bring it up, but, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. People write books. It's not an indictment at all. But so before, you know, he's like, what's the book? Well, he was a huge fan of Chet, like we all were. So he reads the book. He has a great time reading the book. And then he sees Chet at East Bank, and he goes out and sits down with him. They end up having, like, a long meal as they go through the book. Now, Chet didn't know that he read it because it was because nobody was buying the book.
What Chet, you know, taught was make it about you. And, you know, I did a show for a long time with Mac, and Mac was Chet's producer, and Mac followed that. And, you know, people used to get on him because he would do a lap around Chicago Stadium.
I loved it.
Or a lap around Soldier Field, a lap around, you know, the UC baseball parks. And he wasn't doing that lap so people could notice him. He was doing that lap so he could see who was there and what was going on. He didn't mind being seen.
Oh, come on. He loved being
seen.
He
did, right. But I'm saying he would then go on the air and talk about, you know, oh, I saw, you know, it's a big night here. Mike Ditka's in the house. I saw the coach.
Keller Ditka.
Right, right. Right, of course.
There's James. There's Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
But anybody could go up to Chet. It wasn't like he was roped off. You know, he would talk. And Tim Weigel was the same way. You could talk to him, and they'd be happy to talk to you.
There is nothing wrong with wanting to be recognized and have people wave at you. If you have a problem with that, too bad. The guy, he's in. It's show business. He wanted to be seen. I got no problem with that. People are uncomfortable with the fact that they actually have the hunger to be noticed. He at least leaned into it. It was honest, right?
Right.
So, all right, well, that's...
And 68 Bears home openers.
That's crazy. All right, let's take a quick timeout. Amy Guth coming up, 720 WGN.